and Dr. David Ayoub from Illinois, and Dr. Ayoub's a radiologist, but he has taken it upon himself to really research the subject of the thimerosal and vaccines and the disastrous effects, and more recently, the new recommendation for the Centers by the Centers for Disease Propagation, Centers for Disease Control, which actually advocates that doctors should give pregnant women a influenza immunization even during the first trimester of their pregnancy, knowing full well that there is a massive dose, I shouldn't say massive, that there is a dose of thimerosal in that influenza vaccine, and there's no safe dose of thimerosal, and that thimerosal will be, of course, absorbed in the brain of the unborn child, and of course in the first trimester it's a very, very small child, and a little bit of thimerosal can do a terrible amount of damage. And the question is, why would the government advocate such a foolish program that is potentially dangerous to a pregnant woman? So, well, that is the background. David, thank you so very much for being with us again. David, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go right ahead.
Okay. Well, yeah, you're right. We did undertake, and I say we just published a paper. Dr. Edward Yazbach, who I think has been a guest of yours in the past.
He has. In fact, I just read your paper, and it's a great paper. But you tell our listeners about it.
Well, we published a paper, and what we really wanted to do it was to reassess the CDC's policy to vaccinate all pregnant women in any trimester of pregnancy. This is a relatively new recommendation. They have the CDC has gradually increased the requirements in pregnancy since about 1995. In that year, in 1995, they only recommended high, or before 95, they only recommended high-risk pregnancies, in other women with heart conditions or severe pulmonary disease. In 95, they added third trimester with, I would say, very little science to support it. In 97, they added the second trimester, and in 2004, and this is a few years after the CDC recommended taking mercury out of the childhood vaccines, they added it to first trimester pregnancies and really a routine recommendation for all pregnancies.
And now what basically you're saying is the CDC is recommending that all pregnant women get an influenza shot, and even in the first trimester, which of course is when the child is so readily hurt.
That's right. And this is obviously the more immature the developing brain, the more susceptible to neurotoxins and mercury. In the form of this ethyl mercury preservative known as thimerosal, is one of the most categorically toxic forms of mercury.
Well, of course, the Centers for Disease Control tells pregnant women they should be very careful eating tuna fish and swordfish because they have so much mercury in them. So if they're really worried about the tiny amounts of mercury in tuna fish and swordfish, why are they not concerned about the ethyl mercury in the, in the influenza vaccine?
That's right. Much different. That's apples and cows. Mercury in tuna is a much different form, bound to proteins already and ingested through the mouth, and the gut has a defense mechanism to handle a lot of that mercury.
What you're saying is that the mercury in the fish is nowhere near as dangerous as what you're injecting directly into the system. Hang on there, David. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest today is Dr. David Ayoub, who has recently written a paper with Dr. Yazbach, who has been a frequent guest in our program in years past, about the hazards of a new, relatively new, Centers for Disease Control recommendation that all pregnant women, that is, all pregnant women, receive an influenza vaccination despite the fact that it contains ethyl mercury. And of course, David, would you mind repeating what you just commented? Certainly we know that the CDC tells women they should be so concerned about eating fish, tuna fish, swordfish, because there's mercury in it, but they're not to be concerned because the government knows what's good for them as far as this immunization, this influenza shot. So what's the difference between the mercury in fish and the mercury that we're injecting directly into the body, which will go directly to the brain of their unborn child?
Well, I think there's two distinctions that we can make easily. First of all, the mercury found in fish is already in the fish protein. It is bound to tissue, and so when it is ingested, it is in a much more stable form that is not as readily digested, is not as readily absorbed through the GI tract. The GI tract of humans has a compound called metallothionein, and that binds and eliminates mercury from passing through the gut. So we have a great defense from oral mercury exposure. What is injected through a vaccine obviously bypasses the defense system of the GI tract and the liver. It is right from a chemistry lab. It isn't in the form of a protein-bound mercury compound. So it is much more potentially lethal. And the concentration differences are stunning. The Environmental Protection Agency considers mercury levels, a cutoff for upper levels for fish, in parts per billion now, is somewhere between 750 and 1,500 parts per billion. Anything above that they consider quite dangerous and should not be ingested. What you find in a flu vaccine is mercury in the concentration of 50,000 parts per billion. So a magnitude of over 50 times the cutoff for toxic level of mercury in fish. So that's quite an hypocrisy.
All right, fine. Well, now, certainly, how does the CDC justify recommending the influenza? There must be studies that show it's safe. Otherwise, the Centers for Disease Control would never recommend this. What does the producers of the vaccine say? Do they have studies that show it's safe in pregnant women?
Well, they state that it actually hasn't been studied for safety in pregnant women, and that's part of the problem. And I should probably say, if any physicians are listening, they're saying, well, gosh, we've done our homework, and we trust the CDC.
Hold that thought there. I'll be back in just a moment with Dr. David A. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Dr. David A. And we're talking about the CDC recommendation that women, pregnant women, get influenza shot, which has 50 times the maximum dose allowed by the EPA, recommended by the EPA for compared with 50 times the amount compared with the amount that say would be all right as far as fish is concerned. And the fish protein, the mercury is firmly bound to the fish protein, whereas the ethyl mercury, of course, goes directly into the body. It not has to go through the gut at all. But what about the studies, David? I think this is so important. What are the studies that show it's perfectly safe to give this to women? You would certainly do a controlled study before you experimented on the entire population, wouldn't you?
Well, you would think so. And there's really, I think if you look at the whole issue of flu vaccine and pregnancy as a public health policy, there has to be three criteria that have to be met in order for this to be a sound public health policy. Number one, getting the influenza infection has to be serious threat to pregnancy. That's a big question. Is it a big deal if you're pregnant and get influenza infection? Number two, does getting a vaccine lower your risk of getting influenza? And number three, and I think the most important thing, particularly because most flu shots have mercury in it, about 80-90% of them given in the United States this coming season are going to have thimerosal, is it safe? Is it safe for the mother? Is it safe for the pregnancy? Is it safe for the developing fetus, both the viability of the fetus in regards to risk of abortion and also neurodevelopmental outcomes of that fetus? So we really need all three criteria met before this has to be would be considered a sound public health policy. And I think most physicians would say, well, gosh, why question the CDC? They've written position papers on this. In fact, they do just about every year on influenza, and that's really the document we looked for references that looked at all of these issues. It's called the Prevention and Control of Influenza, the Recommendations of the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. Again, published almost every year in their document, the Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. But from our work with autism, thimerosal, and vaccines, we know, and thanks to Dan Burton's committee, the House, the Committee on Health, Human Rights and Wellness, the House Reform Committee, their report in 2003 was a shocking conclusion that mercury in vaccines is likely related to the autism epidemic, and the government agencies, in other words, the CDC and FDA, were guilty of institutional malfeasance for self-protectionism and misplaced protectionism of the pharmaceutical industry.
But, of course, the thing about that the average American never heard about Congressman Burton's committee's report, and I've tried very hard to get that not only from his office but from the other offices. Have you ever actually been able to get a copy of that report?
Yes. I've got a couple versions of it, one with references, And at least, you know, I haven't looked on their website for quite a while. It was obtainable, and we've got it posted on several websites.
All right, great. Oh, do you actually have it posted?
I do have it posted on the a makeshift. We haven't ported over to my URL, so it's a kind of a complicated URL, but I can certainly email people the URL. It's too much to write down on the over the radio.
All right, fine. Well, go ahead, then. So Congressman Burton, this is back in 2003, pointed out the relationship between autism and thimerosal, but of course this has been covered up by the media, it's been covered up by the CDC, it's been covered up by organized medicine, and you have to ask yourself, how could they possibly do that? You would think everybody would be concerned about damaging the mind of a child. And yet it seems that they're really not concerned. Almost one in six American children has some sort of a neurodevelopmental abnormality, whether it be autism or Asperger's disease or ADD or ADHD or learning disability or reading disability or a speaking disability. So many of our children have real mental problems. And, of course, there are many people who think that much of this is related to mercury. Why isn't the CDC concerned about this?
Well, they should be. But Burton's report in 2000, I think, gives an answer to that. When they looked at, they used the committees at the CDC and FDA, these are advisory committees, that were involved with the rotavirus vaccine recommendation. This is a catastrophic vaccine that was pulled from the market a few months after introduction because of bowel obstruction complications. And their committee found that about half the people that sit in these committees at the FDA and CDC had ties to the pharmaceutical industry. And, in fact, some of them were actually patent holders of the vaccine that were allowed to vote on to approve.
So that doesn't sound like a really impartial committee that would really be concerned about the welfare of the children. It seems like they might be more concerned about their patent and all the money they're going to make.
That's right. And that's exactly why we decided to dissect their published recommendation to vaccinate pregnant women. And we weren't particularly surprised what we found, but I think many physicians, particularly OB-GYNs, who are trusting the CDC's recommendation here, and what we found was really quite interesting. Let's just break this down. In the first stage, what we have to prove to in order to assure that this is a good public health policy, is influenza in pregnancy a big deal? And in fact, is we didn't find any science that really supported that. They do quote a British study, and a British study that was done, I think, in the early 2001, they found that there was some comorbidity in women that got influenza, but there was really no statistically significant outcome difference in women who didn't get influenza while they were pregnant in any of these specific categories of comorbidity. And what they really concluded was that women that get influenza tend to have some other illnesses, which makes sense. You know, this is an infectious disease, and people who have immunocompromised, lower socioeconomic status may be more susceptible to infections. In fact, the authors of the British study were so unimpressed with their own findings that it didn't influence the British policy, and today in Britain they do not vaccinate pregnant women. And it's very odd the CDC would cite their paper to support a policy in the United States when, in fact, it didn't change policy in Britain whatsoever. And the second study they support is a study in a Medicaid population in Tennessee. And this is a study that looked at nearly 20 years of evidence going back from 1974 through 1993. And the only thing they could find in these 20 years was that women, and this is Medicaid women, so people who were getting public health support, poor individuals in a public aid population, the hospitalization rate ranged between 3 and 10 per 10,000 pregnancies. Just hospitalization. Now, these women didn't suffer any significant morbidity or no mortalities. 20 years, no mortalities from influenza. So this is an extremely small number of hospitalizations. And the biggest problem with this study is it went back to 1974. And as I recall, I was an intern in 1985, and when we saw patients in the emergency room with various illnesses, in 1985, we had a very low threshold to admit patients with mild illnesses and for observation for a day or so before discharge. I think if this study had been done in modern age, they would even show hospitalization rates differed between pregnant and unpregnant women. So this is a truly marginal finding of hospitalization rates only was the only morbidity they were able to define. And this, of course, was refuted in a big study in your area in Northern California, looking at a population from 1997 through 2002. This was a non-Medicaid population, And they only found about 1.8 hospitalizations per 10,000 pregnancies. That was fewer than 2 pregnancies per year in the 5-year study were admitted to the hospital with the diagnosis of influenza. So that's extremely, extremely infrequent illness. And why would, you know, when you think about it, pregnancy is not a state of immunocompromise. It has never been shown to be a state of immunocompromise. So logically, I don't know why any scientist or physician would think that a pregnant woman would have a higher risk of getting an infection, a serious outcome of an infection like this during pregnancy. It just hasn't been proven. The CDC did try to support their policy by quoting studies back in the Spanish flu epidemic of 1918-1919 and also the Asian flu epidemic in 1957-58. The papers they cited, if you actually pull the papers and read them, which we did, were not really that convincing. Several of these papers actually stated that the morbidity and mortality of pregnant women wasn't any different than women who weren't pregnant. So we would, of course, expect a much higher mortality in any medical condition, you know, 100 years ago. No question about it. We have x-rays to diagnose pneumonia very readily. We have antibiotics to treat bacterial pneumonia, which is a complication of influenza. And most of the deaths, even in these epidemics and pandemics, were related not necessarily to influenza per se, but a pneumonia complication of influenza. And as I said, we can diagnose and treat that very readily today. So, you know, it's odd. If an orthopedic surgery, for example, we know mortality after a hip replacement, I'm sure 57 years ago, was much higher. So you wouldn't support or you wouldn't have any influence on deciding to do hip surgery today based on statistics 50, 60 years ago. It would be pretty ridiculous. And that's what the CDC apparently has tried to do.
All right, fine. So this influenza in women is not that much of a problem, but what about as far as the effect of the influenza shot? Influenza shot a dangerous thing? You know, if it's dangerous, why they should certainly have some study to show that that it either is or is not dangerous.
Well, going to the safety of the vaccine, here's what they say. They quote one study, and they say that basically about 2,000 women got an influenza vaccine and there was no adverse fetal outcome. And that was a study in 1973 at Boston University Medical Center. But that's not really what the study showed, if you pull it. The study actually had the title of polio vaccine in influenza in pregnancy, and shockingly, what the study actually showed that women who were pregnant that got a polio vaccine had offspring with a statistically higher risk of cancer in the first year of life. And that was really quite shocking. They only looked at cancer outcomes from influenza vaccine. Of course, it's a very narrow scope of complications. The women could have lost their pregnancies or could have had babies with mental retardation. It would have never been picked up in the scope of the study that only was looking at cancer rates.
And was there any increase in cancer in the women that had had the influenza shot?
There wasn't. But it was a very short, it was only a 1-year follow-up. So who knows what the 10-year follow-up would have been.
And so basically they used this study does that confirm the fact that it's safe or not safe?
Well, they say that this is proof of safety, but of course it really isn't.
All right, fine, we're going to be back here in just a moment here, because it was primarily a study of polio vaccine, not of influenza vaccine. We'll be right back. All right, David, go ahead and pick up the rest of the story.
Well, in fairness, when you're talking about safety, there have been a few other scattered small series published since then, that actually aren't even cited at the CDC paper. But the problem with these studies is they're very, very small in scope. For example, one study looked at 56 women that had vaccines, another study 189 women. And really, in order to be certain that the influenza vaccine is safe in pregnancy, you really have to look at thousands of women. So there's really no safety studies whatsoever. There was a study published in 2003 in Texas, and this is a non-Medicaid population, that really raised some concern. And the odd thing about this study, this was carried by Reuters news service after it was published. And the title of the Reuters report was "The Flu Vaccine Can Safely Be Given in the First Trimester of Pregnancy," but the study actually had nothing to do with that. They didn't even report how many cases were given the vaccine in first trimester, and they only followed patients if the child was born healthy and made the first well baby visit to the pediatrician. So the study was designed that if the baby was aborted, for example, the patient would have been eliminated from the study. So that's an odd conclusion based on Reuters' report, based on what compared to what the study really was assessing. So the study had really little to do with safety, but it did actually show some problems in women getting vaccines. There was a higher risk in women that got the vaccine of having abnormal glucose tolerance tests, gestational diabetes, preeclampsia, which is a condition of hypertension in the mother, which can be quite serious, and transient hypertension not related to preeclampsia. So oddly enough, there are four different measures that women that got the vaccines had a higher risk of than the unvaccinated.
In other words, basically what you're suggesting is that there is a toxic effect on pregnant women from the vaccine. Is that correct?
There appears to be, and that's not a surprise because other studies looking at mercury-containing vaccines have linked vaccination to diabetes in childhood. And mercury exposure, of course, has been associated with other cardiovascular complications, and hypertension is one of those. And we're talking about the environmental toxicological literature. So it appears to be that in this study, and it's still a relatively small study, there was some negative outcomes in women who got the vaccine.
What about the incidence of abortion after taking a thimerosal shot or a vaccine containing thimerosal during pregnancy, first trimester, second trimester? Are there any human studies or any animal studies to show that it does not increase the abortion rate?
Well, the funny thing is, if you read the manufacturer's statements that come in their package insert, they state that the flu vaccine hasn't been tested in pregnancy. That isn't completely true, however. Let's start with experimentally. We did find studies that looked at what happens to pregnant animals when they're exposed to thimerosal. This is a very specific form of vaccine preservative. And we found studies published in 1972, 1975, and 1987. And they used various animal models, rabbits, chicken embryos, rabbits, and so forth. They used thimerosal in increasing concentrations to look for a dose-response relationship. And in each of these studies, they found that the more mercury these pregnant animals were exposed to, the higher the risk of fetal death. And some of these risks increased by as much as 32-fold. In animals exposed while pregnant. So there's certainly, from the animal study experience, there is a biological plausibility that prenatal thimerosal exposure can cause abortions. There are no clinical studies published, and it's quite odd.
You would hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Dr. Ahab is simply saying that in animal studies of animals that were given thimerosal that were pregnant, there was a significant increase in abortion in the various animals, whether it be rabbits or whatever the experimental animal they were using, and they're receiving the dose of thimerosal. So you would think that they would be concerned if it has this toxic effect on various animals, that it might have a toxic effect on human beings. And so before they ever recommended it for nationwide use, they would run some sort of a controlled study to determine what effect it had on human beings, or are they going to carry out a massive experiment on an entire population?
Well, it's pretty odd, and the red flags are really all over the place if you look carefully. Even though there's no clinical controlled studies that look at outcomes in pregnancy adequately, you look at the Eli Lilly manufacturing safety data sheet. Now, this is the safety sheet that they're required. Now, Eli Lilly doesn't produce this anymore, but they were the biggest producers of thimerosal before they gave up the manufacturing rights. That form states this, that thimerosal is known to cause birth defects and other reproductive harm. The National Toxicology Program also classifies thimerosal as a teratogen, which means it can cause birth defects.
How long ago was this actually published?
Oh, well, I don't know the year of publication. It's available at the National Toxicology Program's website, so
okay.
It's updated and it's current. And the California EPA, of course, has Proposition 65, and they made a very strong statement about thimerosal, and this is in response to Bayer Incorporated wanted the California EPA to reconsider the classification of thimerosal as a human toxin. And their response was strong, and it said this, that the evidence of reproductive toxicity, including severe mental retardation and malformations in human offspring who were poisoned when their mothers were exposed to ethyl mercury, the studies were voluminous. In other words, there's incredible amount of evidence showing it's a human reproductive toxin.
And so despite the fact that there's a tremendous amount of information, voluminous would be the word that would be used, the CDC has made the recommendation that every woman should be injected, every pregnant woman should be given a thimerosal-containing vaccine. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, it doesn't seem to make sense. And they also are very clear that the drug inserts are very careful to state that we don't know whether it can cause reproductive or impair future reproduction. And you might think, well, wow, you know, a lot of people don't think about that. Can that lower the fertility rates in the recipients of these vaccines, you know, the offspring as they become adults and even the mother? And we do have evidence that thimerosal does impair future fertility. And the study that we found, ironically, was at the FDA's website on a list of eight papers which they claim proves thimerosal is a safe preservative. This is a study done by Gassett by Batts in 1990. Batts is the first author, and they looked at the effect of cilia function when you drop thimerosal on sheep trachea. Now, cilia, for those that don't know, are the little hairs that occur in a number of places in the human body that are important for motion. For example, they line the airway to get rid of, to move dust out of your trachea and lungs and so forth. But it's very vital for fertility. It makes up the part of the sperm which makes the sperm move or allows motility of the sperm. It also lines the fallopian tube in women, so it's important to move the fertilized ovum into the uterus for implantation. And what they found is it's toxic to the cilia. It completely arrests cilia in only a few minutes of exposure. So there's certainly a biological plausibility that thimerosal can sterilize individuals, both men and women, if they're exposed to this. We certainly don't have any clinical studies to show that, but we know from the general mercury literature, looking at dental hygienists, for example, and dentists, and I know there was a study done about 15 years ago in China when they looked at increased mercury in seminal vesicle fluid. The higher mercury concentration, the lower the sperm function, both in motility and morphology.
Well, have there been any studies done in animals at all that showed that, there was increased abortion rate that carried over into the next generation?
Well, with some forms of mercury, and actually you have to remember this form of mercury changes in the body. It starts out as a thiosalicylate combination. A thiosalicylate and ethyl mercury converts to pure ethyl mercury, and that breaks down into inorganic mercury. And inorganic mercury has a very large list of known toxicity. And there are studies that actually show that not only does it lower the fertility rates in offspring, but it does that for several generations down the road.
In other words, this goes from generation to generation as a direct result of a one-time poisoning?
That's right. Potential.
And so this is really a rather frightening thing. If it does it in animals, do we know what it's going to do in human beings? Well, aren't there some sort of laws that say if something is harmful in an animal, it should not be used in human beings, or is that just for cancer?
No. In fact, there are laws that exist to protect us from things like that.
But, of course, it doesn't seem that those laws are being enforced. It seems to me that the CDC has their own agenda. All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Dr. David as we explore this directive that comes from the CDC. It's telling doctors, you go ahead and give an influenza injection to every pregnant woman. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Abe was saying that in pregnant animals, was it straight thimerosal that they gave them that would have the effect passed down from generation to generation, or was it some other form of mercury?
Well, I think that was an inorganic mercury study that we cited in our paper. We didn't have a thimerosal, but really it breaks down into it, so it's a biodegradation product of thimerosal. So I think it can be applied to thimerosal quite readily based on the toxicokinetics of the ethyl mercury.
Well, that's really a rather frightening thing that it would go from generation to generation to generation.
Yes, we certainly don't know, and it would really take a large human population study to look at the potential effects. And I'm afraid we have an experimental population right now. We have a generation of children that got large doses of mercury in childhood vaccines. And if there's going to be a reproductive side effect to this vaccination from kids in the late 80s. Going forward, we're going to start seeing as those kids mature, and these are even neurotypical children who didn't get autism or ADHD or learning disabilities, we may see an epidemic of infertility in both men and women. And time will tell what these numbers are doing. But we know that infertility has been on the rise for a couple of decades now in this country and other countries as well. So it may be hard to separate some of the other environmental factors that are involved, but certainly the prospects are quite frightening in this country, considering how much we have dosed these children with thimerosal.
Well, do we have any evidence at all, other than the animal studies, that a thimerosal given to a pregnant woman will actually increase the incidence of abortion?
Well, we do. We have some evidence, not only just abortion, but birth defects. The first question you asked was abortion. We have it at our access, and anyone can look this up. The CDC and the FDA run a database for adverse events following vaccination. It's called the VAERS database, the V-A-E-R-S database, Vaccination Adverse Event Reporting System. And I would say that it's a very underutilized reporting system. It's a passive database. But when we looked, and I think it was initiated about 1991, when we looked at cases, reports of adverse outcomes in pregnancy following the flu vaccine, we found, as of just about a month ago, about 13 reports of abortion, fetal death, fetal demise following the flu vaccine. But what's really very specific about that, of course they say that, you know, spontaneous abortions can happen in the first trimester, but we found a geographical and temporal, my co-author has written a column on this for online health journal called Red Flags Daily. And what he found is in these reports, there was a cluster in 2005 in North Carolina.
Hold that thought for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Dr. David. He's talking about the fact that there, as they analyze the CDC VAERS database, and these would be reports from people and from doctors across America of simply adverse responses to vaccinations, and they found clusters of women who would have abortions after receiving their influenza shots during their pregnancy. So pick up the story there.
That's right. Well, these reports stated that there were, now it depends on how you interpret it, there were at least 4 of these events and possibly 9. There was a 5th report that basically combined 5 reports, so it's a little hard to interpret, but at least 4 cases, and I think it was all the same date, November 28, 2005, reports of women in the second and third trimester who got a flu vaccine and lost their fetus. And there was only 6, there's only one other report outside of North Carolina the whole year. So you have a geographical cluster, you have a temporal cluster, and there was only, out of those 4 or 5 cases for sure, there was only 3 vaccine lots. So now you have at least 2 cases were from the same vaccine lot. So there's 3 issues. There's basically 3 criteria for causality: a shared lot, geographical cluster, and a temporal or timing cluster. And it's the odds of this happening by chance in one state is very, very small. So I think any statistician would look at this and say that this is almost certainly a cause and effect. And we know it's biologically plausible, so why would that surprise us? And we looked a little closer at those vaccine lots, and turned out that many of those lots were the so-called hot lots. Any vaccine lot that has more than 10 reports to VAERS is considered a hot lot. And probably what underlies that is there's, you know, too much of something in it. And we assume that is too much mercury preservative. It was just bad quality assurance of the plant, something like that. But there were a number of reports in non-pregnant women that were quite serious with the same loss. So I think that's some pretty strong evidence that this has occurred in this country in humans, that we have lost, women have lost their babies from the flu vaccine. There's another line of evidence that it causes birth defects, and this is a report that's been around for, over 30 years. This is the largest prospective study done looking at birth defects relative to medicinal exposures is the Collaborative Perinatal Project that performed in Boston. It was started as an NIH project, and they looked at over 50,000 pregnancies between 1958 and 1965, and they found in women who got the flu vaccine there was a 7-fold risk of cleft palate in the children. There was about a 2.6-fold risk of microcephaly or small brain. There's a doubling of risk of of a congenital abnormality of the stomach called pyloric stenosis. And they also looked at thimerosal exposures, and of course they found a 2- to 3-fold risk of birth defects in women that were exposed to thimerosal. So these findings are in keeping with what the National Toxicology Program says. They're in keeping with what the manufacturing safety data sheets tell us from the manufacturers. So this is a very toxic chemical. It causes birth defects in animals. It causes birth defects in humans. And why we are injecting it in the flu vaccine, you must think, well, wow, it must be very, very important to get for women to get the flu shot. And that's the third part of the myth from the CDC policy that we really, I think, blow out of the water. How effective is this flu shot? And it's really quite remarkable how ineffective it is. We can look at this in a couple of ways. First of all, how effective is a flu shot in preventing illness? You will hear, and many physicians will repeat this, that the flu shot is effective in 70 to 90% of the cases in preventing flu. What we found, it's actually 7%. That's 70% effective. And you have to be careful on the verbiage that's used in describing the effectiveness. There's a term called effectiveness, and there's a term called efficacy. And what the CDC really says is there's a 79% efficaciousness or efficacy in the vaccine. Let me explain this. First of all, the majority of cases of flu during the flu season are not due to influenza virus. In fact, we found only 12% of the cases in a study period between 2000 and 2005, only 12% of the cases of flu were proven to be influenza virus. In other words, most of those cases were other viruses or bacterial infections, things like that. They pick three antigens they can place in it, three types of influenza. Usually two of them are influenza A subcategories and one's influenza B subcategory. CDC is right about half the time. So when you take 50% of 12.5%, you're talking about a 6 to 7% effectiveness at getting a flu shot and preventing you from getting the flu the next season. Not very impressive. And the other thing, and probably what the CDC harps on the most, is this prevents people from dying from flu. How many people die from the flu? And that's, I think, a big misconception. We hear every year that there's about 36,000 deaths annually from influenza. That number actually isn't a number that is measured. That's a number that's calculated and estimated from a mathematical model. And it's really never been validated. If you look at the CDC's own data that they keep in the National Vital Statistics System, they report, this is another sample of the 5-month period we looked at, they report a really odd category of influenza. They combine influenza with pneumonia, and a real number now reported from hospitals between about 60 and 90,000 deaths a year from influenza and pneumonia. It's odd that you combine those categories because, you know, pneumonia is a very common morbidity and mortality in patients that are immunocompromised. Postoperative patients, patients that have heart failure in the hospital, patients, chemotherapy patients, of course. If you split that up, you find out, and this is all age groups, not just pregnant women, in those 5 years, if you look at cases in which the laboratory confirmed an influenza infection, there were between 18 and 99 deaths annually. That's a 36,000, actually less than 100 deaths annually in cases that were laboratory confirmed.
And, of course, now, this is the entire population. This is just an impregnated.
The entire population.
And, of course, is there any evidence that that this is a significant problem with pregnant women? Certainly the Kaiser statistics that you showed, a couple of women hospitalized out of every 1,000?
I don't know. You know, we haven't found a case report of a death from influenza vaccine other than, you know, the 1918 epidemic in 1957.
You're talking really about just the influenza, not the
influenza
vaccine.
Influenza.
Right.
So I'm not sure any woman has died from influenza infection. It just seems to be extraordinarily rare.
Now, what about, of course, the children, of course, that they would probably say, well, we're concerned about the children. But it seemed to me that the risk-benefit to the child is far greater from getting that bolus of mercury that's going to go to their brain and destroy it than the fact that they're going to die. In fact, tired, at least the suggestions with the animal studies, there's a higher incidence of abortion in the animals that got the thimerosal than in the general population. So neither one of those are a valid reason for giving the vaccine.
No. I mean, in adult death following vaccination on VAERS. Now, there's been lots of reports of adults dying after a flu vaccine. And we actually found that there are more, and if you look at women of age producing years, between 20 and 40, we actually found more cases of deaths reported following the flu vaccine in this age group than death from getting the flu in this age group. So it appears to be getting the vaccine has higher risk to you than getting the infection. That's what it appears.
Well, of course, we've known people who've taken the flu shot, and they come down with the flu. I specifically have never taken a flu shot, never intend to, and I'm pretty healthy for somebody who's 77 years old.
Yes, no, and actually two of these studies looked at the effectiveness of populations getting the flu shot. Both found that women that got the flu shot reported influenza-like illness four times more often than those women that did not get the flu shot. So you have to conclude that either the influenza vaccine is ineffective or that getting the flu is a complication of the flu vaccine, and we know that to be true because the manufacturers will tell you that. One of the side effects is influenza-like illness. So it's a bit ironic.
Is this a new recommendation being accepted by OBGYN doctors across America that are they actually giving these other people that don't know any better an influenza shot? You know, even during the first trimester when it would do the maximum harm to the child?
Well, I know that there has been a lot of promotion from the American College of OBGYN promoting the flu vaccine in the last couple of years, since 2004. And I just in personal experience with our obstetrician who offered us on our first office visit while my wife was pregnant, our obstetrician basically said, "Hi, my name is Dr. So-and-so, and you need a flu shot because the CDC says you need it." And, of course, I handed him this manuscript that I was working on at the time, and he looked at it and just grinned and said, "Well, you know, the CDC recommends us. That's all I know." And in fact is that doctors are quite busy, and with new policies, you know, this took me several months to go through this literature. And unfortunately, most doctors just have blind faith that, hey, what the CDC says or what the American College of OB-GYN says must be true, so why question it? And they wouldn't give it a second thought. But we were hoping, and I have to congratulate you in California, you were the first state actually to follow through on the thimerosal ban. And yeah. In California, the state now, California Health Department ordered, I think, about 60,000 doses of thimerosal-free flu vaccine, and they have notified clinicians, from my understanding, in your state, not to use, that it is against the law in California this flu season to use mercury in flu vaccine.
Well, you know, I suspect, though, however, it was not organized medicine that got this legislation through that banned thimerosal in the vaccines. Do you know anything at all about the position that the California Medical Association took on that issue?
Well, I don't specifically. I've been involved in several states' legislative actions, and it's varied. Typically, what's going on right now is the public health and the American Academy of Pediatrics are the biggest opposers of removing thimerosal from flu vaccines. In Illinois, and we passed a bill last year, but the public health department filed an exemption. Initially, public health was neutral. The medical society was neutral. The Academy of Family Physicians was neutral, so we really didn't have any opposition. We came to the bargaining table, and we all agreed it would be best to remove it, but sometime after the bill was signed and before it was implemented, the Public Health Department decided they weren't going to notify any physicians or hospitals here, and they issued a statement that said they can't get it. They can't get the flu vaccine without mercury.
Which isn't true at all, is it?
Well, it's not true whatsoever because New Mexico in February ordered about 60,000 doses, even though they didn't have a law. They just had common sense. Unfortunately, they didn't pass a law, but I'd rather not pass a law and not give the thimerosal. And then California just, of course, followed suit. So it's in Illinois for a public hearing on this issue because we think it's... there's quite some chicanery going on for the industry to make this statement. And our health officials got support from the CDC, which in turn got support from Sanofi Adventist, in basically writing a statement saying, no, we will not sell a lot of mercury to any one state because they have to distribute an aerosol-free vaccine throughout the state in a uniform manner. But the fact is, industry has never sold out of thimerosal flu vaccine. They've always thrown away excess. Every year they've made it, they've never sold out. And they're on record saying they can double production if people will just buy it. Public health departments, by and large, aren't buying the safer flu vaccine.
And, of course, this is really what is so disturbing. Is it public health officials and CDC officials, you know, across America doing everything they can to block efforts, if they're going to give the influenza vaccine, don't give it for the thimerosal, let it don't give it with the mercury, and they're doing everything to block efforts to prevent the mercury-free vaccines from being given. That, to me, is just doesn't make any sense. I don't think you should take the vaccine anyway, but of course you certainly shouldn't take it with the thimerosal, and it seems that they're intent upon giving them the thimerosal.
Well, it's really sad, and put it in perspective how tragic this is. When we took mercury out of flu vaccines after 1999, we took it out of the neonatal hepatitis, the hemophilus B, and the DTP vaccine. We have been so aggressive at adding it back to children in 2004 at 6 to 23 months of age, and then we expanded that up to 5 years of age, and of course pregnant women. If you look at the cumulative dose that the population is getting by the time kids turn 5 years of age today, they're getting about 125 micrograms of mercury by the age of 5, and the peak in 1999 was 237 mics. So we're giving over half of the peak when the CDC made the public statement, hey, we're going to get it out.
And I think that this, so it's important for our listeners to understand that, you know, back in 1999 by the American Academy of Pediatrics and the CDC, they all agreed we got to take the thimerosal out of the childhood vaccines, and it, of course they left it in for a few years. Gradually they used up what I believe to be the poisonous supply, and giving it to the children, but eventually, of course, it was all gone. And then they made recommendations that they get it in the influenza vaccine, not only for children at 6 months of age, and every year thereafter?
That's right. Actually, at 6 months of age, you're going to get it 1 month apart, because you get a smaller, a PD dose, which is only 12 and a half mics rather than the standard month. And then annually after that, yes.
And then, of course, to give it to the mother so that the greatest damage that you would do to the child would be to, of course, to give it during the first trimester of pregnancy, but even more, more really shameful in my estimation, is that although they took it out of the childhood vaccines here in the United States, they left it in the vaccines we're giving all throughout the rest of the world to the children in underdeveloped countries, because we're from America and we're here to help you.
That's right. We have met several women whose children regressed into autism after the influenza vaccine. And you have to remember that this doesn't occur in a vacuum. You know, there's mercury in the environment, and there's quite a variability to how much mercury children have already at birth before they get to the age of getting the flu vaccine. And if a child is taking, for example, antibiotics or taking Tylenol or on a milk diet, those three things will impair the body's ability to get rid of mercury. So there's a considerable difference in the blood levels achievable by one shot depending on some of these biological predispositions in children. And then there's genetic predispositions as well. We know some children, about 1 in 6, do not have the enzymatic activity levels that makes them susceptible at not being able to eliminate mercury as fast. And if you don't eliminate it, you accumulate it, and that's when it becomes toxic.
And of course, when you accumulate it, a certain significant part of that goes into the brain, doesn't it?
That's right. That's one of the major targets. And particularly in women, it actually crosses the placenta quite readily, being an organic compound, and it concentrates in the fetal circulation to about 4 to 5 times higher than it does in the maternal circulation. So the developing fetus is, in a very literal sense, a sponge when it comes to mercury exposure.
And 1 in 5 to 6 American children has a neurodevelopmental or learning defect. And this was never like this before. And we have to ask ourselves why. I mean, we see so many of the young people, and when they're graduating from high school, and they are not able to compete with children compared, from other countries throughout the world. And is this happening by accident? Or is there, we'll have to leave that up for another program. We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. David Ayer. David, would you like to get your web page out there or information, how people can get information on what we're talking about?
You betcha. I've got a few sources. There is the journal that published the paper has free access to the article, so you can feel free to download it. The website is www.jpands.org. jpands.org. And it's in the most current issue, which is summer 2006, of the Journal of American Physicians and Surgeons. And I would encourage listeners to download that and distribute it, especially to your OB-GYNs or family practitioners, because this article has not been widely disseminated, obviously, in the press. We wouldn't expect it to be. It's not favorable to the pharmaceutical industry or government health agencies. And if people would like any other materials, they can email me, and I'd be happy to respond and send them any materials. My email address is raypoke, R-A-Y-P-O-K-E, at macmac.com. That's raypoke, R-A-Y-P-O-K-E, at mac.com.
Well, do you think that anything is going to be able to be done to counter this? I know that you had been doing a lot of work with some legislators, hoping to expose what the policies of the CDC are going to create, the problems they're going to create.
We are planning some things here in Illinois, and I think you could take action at the local level. You can take it at the state level, and you can take it, obviously, at the federal level. We think that thimerosal in vaccines violates the Federal Food and Drug and Cosmetic Act because it is an adulterated product. It's mislabeled. It is clearly the manufacturers say it. We don't know whether it causes harm, and we know that there's plenty of evidence that the components of the flu vaccine do cause harm. And in fact, the flu vaccine we know is associated with birth defects based on the Boston Perinatal Collaborative Project. So that is in violation of federal act, and many states have the same kind of codes in their law. So it's just a matter of having enough people with interest to take this at these levels, local, state, and national levels, and try to get policy changes. Of course, from our experience with autism and vaccines, we have not had much success at any of these levels with some exceptions, and California is happy to say is a very positive exception there. So we can only pray and hope that we can open people's minds and take a look at what the science really tells us.
Well, David, I want to thank you so very much for what you do. Did you ever get those things I sent you dealing with my talk and some of the other documents I sent?
I did. Thank you very much, and it'll be delivered in a couple of weeks.
God bless. Well, thanks very much, and I hope that you'll keep in touch with us and keep us advised as to what's going on. I think your work is so vitally important.
Thanks, Dr. Stanley.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly you can get David Abe's latest article from the Journal of the American Physicians and Surgeons website, the Journal of the American Physicians and Surgeons website. If you'd like to email him, his address is raypoke, R-A-Y-P-O-K-E, @mac.com. raypoke@mac.com. He'll get you the information. And I personally am indebted to David for the work he's done on autism and the relationship between thimerosal and autism, but now on this terrible thing that they're doing to our children and to, you know, their minds. Why would anybody do anything like that? Well, let me suggest, if you have not yet seen Planned Population Reduction, you need to get it. Planned Population Reduction. In a similar manner, if you have not seen my video on the hidden agenda and the syllabus on the hidden agenda, how they're poisoning the minds and the fertility of our people and increasing the heart disease by fluoridating water, you have the scientific studies and you'll actually get them in the syllabus because I have permission from the people who publish the Journal of Fluoride to actually reproduce these abstracts and summaries. So here's information that you can get on this subject. One would, of course, be my talk on planned population reduction. The other would be my talk on the hidden agenda of the fluoride deception, and of course the syllabus that goes with that. The book, The Fluoride Deception, is so vitally important. The book, Evidence of Harm Going into Autism, is so vitally important. I believe that there are people who know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want you to know. Do you know a better way to destroy a nation than to destroy the minds of a generation of our youth? could there be anything that evil? And I would like to suggest, if you listen to our program long enough, maybe we can convince you there is. Then, of course, you need to get our four-tape set on autism. You need to understand there's some new, exciting, excellent treatments. And Dr. Mark Geyer, we have interviews with him where he tells us about that. They're doing everything they can to discourage treatment for autism that has returned many of these children almost to normal. And let me repeat that. They're doing everything they can to discourage treatment of these children that has actually brought many of them back almost to normal. Why would you want to discourage treatment that would help children? Well, for the same reason you'd want to abort the safest insecticide we've ever had that's resulted in the death of almost 100 million people, predominantly children, since 1973, when Williams Ruckelshaus outlawed and banned the use of DDT in America, and we began to discourage it throughout the world. You need to begin to understand what we're up against. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like information on Dr. Geyer's latest treatments, that was my last interview with him, you can order that taped interview. And, of course, you can find out what he is doing, which is really amazing. And they've done it with 68 children, most of them with truly almost miraculous results. Again, our number, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. You can certainly listen to our programs there on the Internet, directly or indirectly, 5 hours a day. We're also on the American Freedom Network, AmericanNewsNet.com, GCNLive.com, RBNLive.com, and SoundWave2000.com, as well as RadioLiberty.com. We're on the shortwave 4 hours a day, on Telstar 5, 9 hours a day. We could certainly use your help to maintain the base that we have out there. We hope many of you will join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. If you'd like our latest newsletter, and we talked about it on immigration, that's the main newsletter, we'll send you one free of charge. And, of course, we hope you'll want to subscribe. And if you don't, why? Of course, we want you to have the information, because that's why I do what I do 5 hours a day. And so we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.